You ready to start?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, let's get into it.
Welcome back, everybody.
Back.
Another exciting episode of the How Money Podcast,
mm-hmm.
Season 2, Episode 2.
Yeah, I'm surprised we've never actually filmed in this location before.
This is the homestead.
This is my backyard.
An undisclosed urban garden somewhere on the west coast of America.
Exactly. I think there's like a rogue chicken running around like as we speak. There's only one chicken that can actually get out.
Is it the tiny mangy gray one?
No, it's like the tiny black one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When I wrangled the chickens like a couple weeks ago, the tiny mangy gray one was
That's Kim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all Aaron's chickens. They're all named after various Kardashians.
Mm-hmm. It's the matriarchy. Name another group of iconic, powerful women which to name your group of hens. But yeah, I mean, there's only one that gets out at a time, so I'm like fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so we're in a beautiful setting, perfect setting for Ordinal's Q&A.
Yeah, there's tomatoes, there's blackberries, there's citrus, there's weed plants.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely out here.
There's all legal.
Yeah,
too.
All legal. That's right.
That might disclose our West Coast location.
Could be. Yeah.
Although I don't even know, actually. That might be all West Coast.
It's pretty libertine out here at this
mm-hmm.
point.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, this is like the anarchist wet dream. I mean, you can go.
I mean, I feel like there's, you know, there are some legal restrictions here that are sort of annoying.
You can show up in any store and steal anything as long as
that's
it's
true.
Less than $950.
Right. Yeah.
This is what the anarchists want, isn't it? You know?
No, it's not. Come on. Don't straw man the anarchists like that.
Okay. All right. We should get through these because we have a lot of questions. So I tweeted a couple days ago asking.
You twat.
I twat a couple. What is it for X?
I refuse to call it anything but tweet and twat.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad to get rid of tweet. Like just for post.
Yeah. It's terrible.
It's like.
Post, repost, and quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this recording?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right.
Is it recording?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It has the red light.
Okay. Yeah, it's recording.
Anyway, so I posted a couple days ago asking if people had questions for Casey, and we got a lot of questions.
A lot of questions. A lot of good questions.
A lot of good questions.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to get through every single question that was asked, but I think we'll get through a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's start controversial. K or Dis asks Casey's thoughts on BRC20.
Yeah. I am not a huge fan of BRC20. Yeah, I know, guys. I know. Yeah, I mean, like, there's a reason that I created a sort of NFT-like protocol on Bitcoin and not a fungible token protocol on Bitcoin. Ultimately, I think that non-fungible tokens that are these weird curios and collectibles are kind of much more interesting than fungible tokens. Fungible tokens, by and large, are just, you know, kind of scammy and kind of boring and don't really have any real value prop.
It's just gambling and speculation, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just sort of like altcoin casino. In fact, BRC20s, they really remind me of the old school altcoin days, which was, if you look at Bitcoin's history, there was, you know, Bitcoin came out in 2009 and there weren't really many altcoins for a while. And I believe it was in like 2013, 14 that was sort of the period of what I'll call old school altcoins.
Was that like the weed coin one?
Yeah, like weed coin, pot coin, Litecoin came out of that. Terra coin, like all sorts of like random things.
The utility is it's Bitcoin, but you can pay for weed with it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like Africa coin, you know, all sorts of shit. Basically just taking the Bitcoin code base, changing a name, and then like changing the supply or the supply schedule or the proof of work or whatever, and then relaunching it. And they were sort of distinguished from the later 2017 ICO boom that they really didn't have any distinguishing characteristics. They were just issuing a new token. Now, the reason that the 2017 ICO boom was different is that in 2017 they claimed to have a bunch of distinguishing characteristics. They had all sorts of crazy like Rube Goldberg machines or Ethereum on-chain mechanics, that most of which just didn't pan out at all. So yeah, BRC20s remind me of the 2014 altcoin boom. And if you sort of look at like, well, which coins are around from the 2004 altcoin boom, none of them. None of them are doing anything. You know, there are coins like Litecoin, or I think Dogecoin was later. I don't remember. But they're coins that are around from then, but they're not doing anything. They just sort of exist in a sort of tepid futility. And that's kind of what BRC20s remind me of.
I feel like BRC20s are like even worse, right? They don't even have like their own chain.
I don't really think that makes a coin better or worse. I mean,
well, it's not really like it seems like it's not even really pretending to have utility in a way.
Yeah, I guess I should like read BRC20 people's marketing materials. I think the utility that BRC20 promoters claim is that like it will pump. Like this is the utility of BRC20s. Like your bags.
Yeah, well,
pump.
They can't explicitly say that lest they be you know.
Listen, I've seen some pretty aggressive marketing out there. Yeah.
Speaking of.
So like yeah, follow up BitGod. Shout out BitGod. when you look out, and also I mean, as long as you're not ripping people off and you're just fucking gambling and you know that that's what you're doing is like memeing and gambling, then that's okay.
Yeah,
it bothers
reduction.
Me when it's like I mean, maybe then BRC20s are a little better than things that claim to have
that's what
some
I'm saying.
Magical
well, yeah, they're
utility.
Worse and they're better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, BitGod question.
Yeah, BitGod asked, when you look out 100 years in the future, will ordinals be remembered by its Pepe memes or BRC20s? I think it's going to be the Pepe memes, guys. I think nobody is going to remember BRC20s. Yeah.
Well, the Pepe memes, like, it's like, you know, the images on the blockchain are like images, but the JSON files, the BRC20s, they look hideous. You know what I mean?
They look disgusting.
So just in terms of like being out of the context of like being a degen that's actually trading it, it's like the image inscriptions, like if you go to any, you know, inscriptions or ordinals explorer, they all filter for images because no one wants to see a million JSONs.
Yeah.
Well, all of them.
Except for ordinals.com.
There's a question about that. I mean, we could ask that one now.
Which runs Ord, which we, you know.
Yeah. At Sol asks, why haven't you filtered and segmented out JSON inscriptions on ordinals.com?
Just laziness and too much stuff to do.
Yeah,
we definitely want to. We're definitely going to, like, Ord will always still index them, but there's a problem right now when you go to ordinals.com, you see a shit ton of BRC20 tokens, which nobody cares about. I mean, people care about the tokens, but
they don't want to see.
They don't care about seeing the JSON.
Yeah.
So we're at some point in the future, we're going to make it so that those things no longer appear on the front page. So it's a little bit more attractive.
Should we keep talking about BRC20 or should we move on?
Well, yeah. Follow up question: like, if BRC20's fungible tokens were to evolve on the ordinal standards, how would you make it more efficient?
From Robert J.F. Clark.
Yep, our boy Robbie. I don't actually know Robert. I'm sure he's a lovely person though.
I hope these people like enjoy that we're saying their names.
I hope so. Yeah.
Whatever. It's on a public platform.
Yeah. So one of the other reasons that I dislike BRC20 is just for technical reasons. This is kind of inside baseball, but BRC20s map addresses to token balances. So you have a Bitcoin address and that address has some quantity of BRC20 tokens. Now, this presents a bunch of issues in that it doesn't fit nicely into Bitcoin's UTXO model, which other asset protocols like inscriptions, I mean, inscriptions aren't an asset protocol, but inscriptions as well as other fungible token protocols like Taproot Assets and RGB both work using Bitcoin's UTXO model, which is that it's a UTXO that contains the asset. And to transfer that asset, you must spend that UTXO and create new UTXOs that create that asset. So this is nice from a protocol level. It fits more nicely into Bitcoin, and it also prevents certain kinds of race conditions. In particular, I don't think you can build a very good PSBT marketplace for BRC20s. Because you can create a transfer inscription, a BRC20 transfer inscription, and then offer it using a PSBT, but somebody can accept that PSBT, sign it, broadcast the transaction, and then you can broadcast a transaction that spends all of your BRC20 tokens to a different address. But because those tokens don't rely on a mutex, those tokens don't live in a UTXO, Bitcoin miners can actually accept both of those transactions. I don't actually know if there are any BRC20 markets that are doing this and are vulnerable, but it's sort of an example of why using address-based protocols don't work very nicely with Bitcoin. So, like you, does that make sense? Like you say, like you offer a BRC20 and a PSBT. It says, I'm going to transfer you 1,000, you know, food tokens. Somebody accepts it, pays you the Bitcoin, finalizes a transaction, broadcasts it. You see the transaction in the mempool, paying you the Bitcoin. Before it gets mined, you broadcast another BRC20 transfer transaction that moves money from your address, like moves the BRC20 tokens out of the address. But then they're spending different UTXOs so they can both be mined, because they don't sort of, the funds aren't in a UTXO. They're just tracked off-chain in addresses.
Interesting. Has anyone like talked about this before?
I don't know. I think it's kind of like in the weeds, and I have not seen, correct me if I'm wrong, are there any like sort of decentralized BRC20 marketplaces that use PSBTs?
I don't think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, this would prevent those from existing.
Interesting. Yep.
So if I were to design a fungible token protocol spec, it wouldn't be anything like BRC20. If it used ordinals, it would actually have the SAT be the carrier of those fungible tokens. You would like mint some tokens, and you would say, using some kind of message, I don't know, like something in an envelope, and then you would say, okay, this token contains this SAT contains however many units of that token. And then when you wanted to transfer that, you would create a new transaction that spent that SAT and then described how that SAT's tokens would be allocated to the SATs in the output. And that would let you do things like offer the token for sale with PSBTs. But in reality, I think that the ordinals is really good for inscriptions, for non-fungible tokens. And protocols like RGB and Taproot assets are way better design for fungible tokens. And I hope they take off. I hope they're wildly successful so that I can stop seeing BRC20s on ordinals.com.
All right, let's move on from BRC20s.
Yeah, and thoughts on RGB versus Taproot assets. This has been contentious. Like, there's been a lot of sort of mud of various kinds slung between the two sort of proponents of both sides, the Taproot assets and RGB. They're sort of competing fungible token protocols. At this point, it's sort of let the best trans cat girl win, as they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I met an RGB guy recently, and I was kind of like dunking on him a little bit. I felt a little bad afterward.
Yeah. My only concern with RGB is it implements a smart contract system, but because it's off-chain and client-side validated, those smart contracts can't encumber BTC, because you can always, if BTC is sort of, if you try to encumber BTC with a client-side validated smart contract, you can always transfer the BTC on-chain, because the miners don't check that the smart contract has been validated. So you can only encumber RGB assets in RGB smart contracts. So that's sort of like a downside. And RGB is much, much more complex than Taproot assets. So it's also been in development for a long time. And sort of the longer that things stay in development, the more pessimistic one naturally kind of becomes that they're ever going to, you know, get released and be finally finished and, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. But it'd be great if RGB.
You're like, thoughts and prayers for RGB.
The more the merrier. May the best trans cat girl win.
Yeah. Anarcho Kappas.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Let's shift the vibe a little bit. Cicero Sats asked, did you inscribe these ordinals yourself? And there's a photo of all the skulls.
Yep.
And if so, are you ever going to put them up for sale, including Inscription Zero?
So yeah, this has been asked many times. Many people have like DM'd me on Twitter to ask me. So I created a long time ago, I think, probably like 10 years ago at this point, 7 years ago, who knows. I made 9 pixel art skulls. Just randomly, I saw a skull that somebody had made on Etsy, a Day of the Dead like skull, and so I just copied it into a little pixel art thing, and then made 9 different colors of it. And then when I was testing Ord to see if inscriptions on mainnet actually worked, I used the black and white skull for inscription number 0. And the other skulls, the other 8 colors, are all on my website. You can just go to rotomore.com and see a bunch of shit that I've made. And the other 8 skulls have since been inscribed, I think probably multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah.
No, these were not inscribed by me. Yeah, they're just random other people taking the skull and copying it.
Which it's like, of course they're going
to
do that.
Yeah, and that's fine. You know, you're totally allowed to do that. The main reason that I've been waiting, like, and yeah, I actually have not. I've inscribed 1.5 inscriptions. Mm-hmm. I inscribed inscription number 0. And then me and Aaron inscribed a How Many podcast.
In the tutorial video that we did.
Which is available for sale for how many Bitcoin?
I think like at least 500.
The HMP?
Yeah.
500 Bitcoin?
How much do you think?
500 Bitcoin. That's
what would you price
that's like,
it as?
That's like $10 million.
We're building a brand here.
No, if somebody gives us...
how much would you sell it for?
Jeez, like 2 Bitcoin maybe?
2 Bitcoin?
Yeah, we each get a fucking fat Bitcoin. Listen, so you're going to turn down
$25,000
for this fucking inscription.
I think at least 10 Bitcoin.
Okay.
For the Hell Money inscription?
Fine, yeah. So we inscribed
the
Hell Money pot
inscription. That's a half of your 1.5 inscriptions.
That's true, yeah. So yeah, okay, 10 Bitcoin for the Hell Money pot inscription. Get at us.
Or 100.
Or
500.
Or 500, you know, whatever.
Make us an offer.
Yeah. But yeah, one of the reasons that I haven't inscribed more things is because I've been waiting for on-chain provenance to be ready. On-chain provenance is a way for collections of inscriptions to be identified, or inscriptions to know that one inscription was made by the holder of another inscription. So this is a feature that me and Raffjaff have been working on. We actually merged it to GitHub. It has not made it into a release, so it's not, you know, technically ready, but it's, you know, there, and probably no changes until it actually makes it into release. So this enables you to create inscriptions that have another inscription that's currently in your wallet as a parent. And so then on that inscription's page, it links to the parent. And then on the parent's page, it links to all the children. So this is a general mechanism. And you can only do this if you are holding at that time the inscription that you want to make a parent. So this is a general mechanism for doing on-chain provenance. So you can create an inscription that represents you, and then you can have child inscriptions that represent different collections that you'd like to make. And then those child inscriptions, those child inscriptions that are collections can then have children of their own, which are the items in the collection. The reason that I've been waiting for this to be around is that otherwise you sort of have to just rely on word of mouth to know what inscriptions are or aren't in the collection. You have to like have it on your web page, or there's some cursed GitHub repo with a big JSON file with all of the collections in them, which is not a very good way of doing things.
Yeah, it's a fucking mess.
Yeah, but it's my fault for not having the shit ready when Ordinals originally launched. So yeah, I'm waiting for that, and then I will, if I do any collections, they will all be children of the Genesis inscription, and then you'll all know that I made something.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to tell people that the inscriptions are not.
They're not
going
to believe you. The degens, they want to believe.
I know.
They want to believe.
I mean, there were people doing some pretty insane, like, Da Vinci Code ass. Like.
Oh, yeah. I've gotten some very Da Vinci Code sort of messages. Like, somebody.
On chain analysis.
Yeah, somebody. I have a bunch of MP3s posted of just, like, songs I like on my homepage. And somebody thought that there was, like, hidden secrets in. Some other things on my homepage, and they were doing like spectral analysis on those MP3s to look for hidden messages.
Nothing but like love to those people, honestly. Like, I hated to like disappoint, you know, like, but yeah. Casey only has inscription 0 and half of the 500 Bitcoin Hell Money Pod inscription.
Yeah, that's right. I deeply regret not making more inscriptions. Like, it's been fucking stupid that I didn't make a bunch of inscriptions.
You could make them at any time.
I could, but, you know, they're not, like, grail early inscriptions.
I think it's kind of iconic that you only have the one and that you're waiting for a parent-child.
Yeah.
I think it's like, long-termism.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just, like, degenning on, like, the inscription numbers.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah, inscription number 0, if anybody wants to buy it. I think 1,000 Bitcoin is.
Oh, but the Hell Money one. You'll sell for 2.
You know.
All right, let's move on. Vibes God asked, can you talk about the naming convention of a sat and break down how the name of a sat was developed and created?
Yeah, so this refers to sat names. Mm-hmm. So every sat has a name.
Love sat names.
Is composed of the letters A through Z. Yeah, basically, since sats have numbers, you can map numbers to names in various ways, and I thought it'd be sort of cute to do that. As far as the specific way that they're mapped, the first thing that I decided was that I would only use the characters A through Z. This is nice because it doesn't include numbers, it doesn't include underscores, it doesn't include symbols. This is nice because those things are often easily confusable. For example, you could register the, you could have the sat name poop, P-O-O-P.
When is that one? That's going to be, that's like 100 years from now. That's a grail
sat in 100 years, yeah. And you could have the sat.
My great grandchildren would be so lucky to have the poop.
Scrabbling over the poop sat.
Wars will be fought.
Yeah, surely. Yeah.
Sorry.
And you could also have, if you had allowed numbers and sat names, you could have the P00P sat. And that those things would be confusable. So you could, it would be easy to confuse them. So I thought characters A through Z would make things, couldn't confuse them. So then I just made a very simple encoding of the, a mapping from the numbers to the strings consisting of the characters A through Z. The other weird wrinkle, though, is that after I did that, I realized that because the first 50 or 5 billion sats are in the Genesis block and presume and are lost and are never going to be spent because the outputs of the Genesis transaction are unspendable, and also many early blocks are unspendable, I decided to make, instead of having the sat names be short and count up, which is sort of the obvious thing, so 0 would be A, 1 would be B, that would make all of the sat, the short sat names stuck inside the Genesis block, so I made them start long and count down. So the sat names start at some incomprehensible 11 character string starting with the letter N, and they count down such that the last 26 sats that will be mined are Z through A, with A being the final sat. So it counts down. So for example, it goes ZY, ZZ, and then, or no, AB, A,
yeah,
and then Z, and then counting down to A.
So like, for example, we're in the 11 character era, right?
Right, it's, yeah, 11. We're waiting for
the sleepiest sat.
Yeah, the first 10 character sat is all Z's, so it's the
sleepiest sat that will ever exist.
That's right.
It's the most Z's.
Yep.
I think that's supposed to be mined on November 5th of this year.
Yeah, we're going to have a pajama party.
We're going to have a pajama party for the sleepiest sat mining, but that will begin the 10 character era, right?
Yep. Pretty
exciting. We're still so early.
We're so early.
Okay, moving on. 1440000 bytes asked, when Covenants Q&A?
Yeah, also known as Floppy Disk Guy. Yeah, no, actually, Covenants is a good topic of an episode. I don't think we ever covered...
What's Covenants?
Covenants are ways that the person who creates a UTXO can constrain how that UTXO is spent in the future. So reasons you might want to do that include congestion control. You can, if you know, fees go up and down, but you want to process a lot of, say, withdrawals from an exchange, you can create one UTXO that you can create right away when fees are high. And that UTXO has a covenant that the only way that it can be spent is by paying out all the withdrawals on the exchange into their own individual UTXOs. Now, if there's many withdrawals, that would be a large volume of transactions. And so this lets you postpone the actual paying out of those withdrawals until a low fee period, but it lets you commit to those withdrawals at a high fee period. So essentially it decouples the sending and the receiving of those Bitcoins.
Sure.
So you send now, and it's sort of like the transaction fans out, but the sending is only, you know, one output transaction. And then the receiving is once that transaction fans out into many more transactions, and you can guarantee that the only way that send UTXO is spent is in a big array of these smaller withdrawal transactions.
And this is related to OpsCTV?
Yep. OpsCTV, also known as BIP-119, also known as Op Check Template Verify, is a proposal for an opcode. It's very simple. It is an opcode that you provide a hash when you're spending a UT, or it is an opcode that takes a hash, and then when that opcode is verified, it requires that the transaction matches that hash. So you can generate a tree of transactions that you would like ahead of time, and those transactions must, or you generate a tree of transactions. You get the hash of all those transactions. You commit to them with OpCheck template verify, and then when your UTXOs are spent, they guarantee that the spending transaction is exactly the transaction that was committed
to. We should have Jeremy Rubin on the pod.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Jeremy wants to jump back into like Bitcoin development.
We're fringe Bitcoiners.
Yeah, we're fringe Bitcoiners. We're friendly. Yeah, I mean, I think so for those who don't know, Jeremy Rubin is the author and champion of BIP 119, which I think is great. I think it got a lot of unfortunate FUD. I think it'd be great to just activate it. Like, why not? And Jeremy just got tired of the bullshit of Bitcoin development, which I totally understand. Like, I've completely avoided core Bitcoin development, really, like, except for a brief period where I did work very briefly at Chaincode Labs doing just sort of normal open source development on Bitcoin Core. But I've stayed away from actually having to participate in Bitcoin protocol development because it's so contentious and it's so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That has been a major lesson of this whole thing. It's the drama.
Yeah. And
the drama of it all.
Yeah. And that's why, I mean, ordinals and inscriptions doesn't really touch Bitcoin Core protocol development at all, which is sort of one of the reasons why I did it and the approach that I took. The one way that it does touch core development is trying to get a BIP number.
We can't. We don't deserve it.
For the ordinals BIP, which I think it's been open for like 6 months or 7 months of this time.
Give us the BIP.
Yeah. Yeah. Just give us that BIP number. But yeah, so yeah, Jeremy's kind of burnt out and now he's working on other, hopefully more.
We could just ask him
things
about like other things too.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yep. So that's just one kind of covenants, OpCTV. There are other kind of covenants. There's more sophisticated
covenants.
The
question was when covenants Q&A.
Yeah, so eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, we could talk about that.
Yep. That's a good idea for an episode.
All right, let's move on. Pat So Francisco asked, what are your thoughts on Arweave?
Arweave is something that I can say is unequivocally a giant pile of dog shit. I really hate Arweave. Everybody sort of has their like pet peeves in the blockchain cryptocurrency space, which generally I broadly loathe, you know, blockchain and cryptocurrency. But decentralized, quote unquote, decentralized file storage is like, these just get my fucking goat. These get my fucking goat. IPFS, Filecoin, Arweave, absolutely hate them. The problem with Arweave is that it claims to be permanent decentralized storage. The problem is that it's like a blockchain. It has a token. Miners store the data and then they get paid in the token.
Mm.
So the problem with Arweave is that if you examine it as a black box, it's something that stores data, and the cost for storing that data is paid for by issuance of this token. So if the value of that token drops below the cost to store the data, then the data will just be lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Miners will stop storing the data. And I think there's many reasons that this could happen. People could simply get tired of Arweave. Like, they could stop speculating on Arweave. You could get a price drop such that the buffer declines and it's no longer profitable to store the data. There could be a different way of storing data, which is more appealing. That would also make Arweave less appealing. There's other things that you can't guarantee retrieval from a system like this. Like, there's some ways that you can guarantee that somebody's storing it, but you can't guarantee that you can actually retrieve it in a reasonable amount of time. It's just impossible to guarantee on a blockchain. What else do I dislike about Arweave? Yeah, and Filecoin also sort of falls in this bucket. Oh, yeah, the other
thing. What about IPFS?
IPFS is like BitTorrent, but worse. I kind of dislike it for different reasons. Like, people use IPFS. I wish they would just use BitTorrent.
I feel like this is going to be a clippable thing. People are going to be like, fuck the ordinals guy.
Yeah, IPFS fucking sucks. I've tried to use IPFS before. It has major issues. It doesn't. This is like so in the weeds, but like, if you store a gig of data on IPFS, it breaks into many, many chunks and it blasts those chunks out over the DHT, the distributed hash table, resulting in gobs and gobs and gobs of network traffic.
Disgusting.
BitTorrent doesn't have this problem. Just use BitTorrent. BitTorrent V2 uses SHA-256. It's fine. It's kind of ghetto, but like, whatever. Arweave, hate it. Oh yeah, and the other thing is that Arweave, on the front page, it says Arweave is like the permanent storage layer. And then if you kind of dig into the docs, it says, well, you know, like, nothing's forever and our we will eventually go away, but we assume that like whatever follows our weave will just sort of subsume all of our weave's data into it, which is like, all right, bro, like, come on, like, you can't say that it's permanent and then admit that, like, even with your ludicrously optimistic view of the network, that it's gonna go away at some point and just be magically subsumed into something else. Oh yeah, another thing that I hate,
oh my god, this episode's gonna be 3 fucking hours
whatever, listen, I got hot takes. The other thing that I dislike about the way that IPFS and Arweave is used is that when NFTs, for example on Ethereum, point to data on IPFS or Arweave, they use an IPFS or Arweave specific identifier. It would be much better if they used a generic hash and then didn't specify how to retrieve that data, such the data could be retrieved from any network. But for example, when you use an IPFS hash, IPFS uses some dumbass like chunked hash that nobody else uses. So it's not a general purpose hash function. So it will make it challenging to retrieve the same data from a different network and verify that data. So I just, yeah, terrible.
You got it out of your system?
Not yet, but you know, we'll come back to it when, yeah.
Okay, Cleo Bitcoin Bank asked, favorite slash most interesting utility?
Yeah, so this is like one of those like old man yells at clouds, like Casey's a hater kind of thing. I think utility, like, what is utility? So NFT collections promise utility, or the holders of NFT collections ask for utility because they want their bags to pump.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't know. I think people like think that blockchains are like really useful technology or something. Like, they're like, soon blockchains will be everything or something like that. And so they think like, oh, blockchains are just really complicated and I just don't understand how actually they're going to be used for everything. But I think actually blockchains aren't that useful. Like, they're good for money and maybe like timekeeping.
Yeah, totally agree.
But like, I think even like the idea of utility, it in my opinion, it like stems from this like weird sort of like, oh, blockchain is so valuable. Blockchain is this like incredible technology that's going to revolutionize everything. And like, it might, but like not because it's going to be like implemented in every thing in your life.
Yeah.
Right. Or in every technology. Yep. Yeah. I don't understand why utility is like has become, I mean, the NFT world in general, which like I've only gotten into since Ordinals popped off, they have all these words that don't mean what they actually mean, you know, like why did utility even become a thing?
I think it's bag pumping. I mean, I think it, a lot of when you look at utility, it's like, well, access to future airdrops, getting some sort of complimentary token, like there's some sort of monkey token that goes along with the Bored Ape Monkey Club.
That's not utility.
I think that's what utility means.
I know, but that's what I mean. That's what I don't understand. Like, where did they come up with this word?
But going back to your earlier point, I totally agree. I think blockchains are useful for Bitcoin. They're useful for ordinals and inscriptions, which I don't view as earth-shattering technologies.
It's not utility.
I view ordinals and inscriptions as like fun, weird digital curios and collectibles. Hopefully they'll be useful for payments in the form of the Lightning Network. Probably useful for stable coins. As much as I wish that people, you know, would just adopt Bitcoin, people seem to want like non-volatile assets to trade in. There's huge demand for stable coins. So, and as far as other applications, I mean, they're really thin on the ground. Like, there's no like blockchain plus AI. There's no like, I mean, on blockchain AI, like that's not a thing.
But that's another example where it's just like people combine two things that they don't understand and they're like, it must be a big thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think people think that blockchain is like a magical technology that can do many, many things. And because NFTs are on the blockchain, they're going to provide these amazing utilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. That from the magical resource of blockchain magic.
Yeah. Blockchain magic is real, but it is very limited in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting for me, like since I made ordinals and inscriptions, like I think a lot of people are much more exuberant about the possibilities of inscriptions than I am. I'm like, these are cool digital curios that you can like pass around and collect, and people are like, OrdFi and like all this shit, and I'm like,
I know.
Please no, guys. enjoy the pepes.
That's just make more pepes.
Yeah.
Panagot asks, is Dick Butt the Holy Grail on Ordinals?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah. Easy. Yeah.
It's iconic. Mm. Inscription 1 is also like such a flex.
Yeah. Rinchdahl commented out the code that prevented him from doing that.
Leonidas asked, the handbook that Casey wrote has become the de facto Bible / constitution of ordinals culture that people often quote or reference and revere as the vision we should stay true to. What is one thing ordinals culture is getting right and one thing we're getting wrong? I like that question.
Yeah, it's been kind of cool seeing that stuff I wrote become so sort of popular and like quoted. I think focusing on the idea of digital artifacts and immutability is definitely the thing that ordinals culture is getting right. That that is the big difference between inscriptions and NFTs on other platforms, is that they're very simple. They're sort of these solid state objects that you can inspect and know exactly what they do without having to audit and without having to trust anybody. So sort of, you know, staying true to those ideals and also just being like kind of Bitcoin focused, you know, like, you know, Bitcoin's it's good.
Yeah, that's like, I think the thing that they're getting right is that like people instantly sort of realized like, oh, NFTs on Bitcoin are so much better than NFTs anywhere else. And I think that was something that instantly people that were in the NFT world that came over to Ordinals realized.
Yep.
And it was cool to kind of see that happen so quickly. You know, meanwhile, the Bitcoin maxis were like, you know, like it was interesting to see how the NFT people understood Ordinals so quickly.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that the Ordinals and inscriptions were really made for existing NFT people.
Yeah.
Like it was me I like some NFTs, some especially generative art NFTs on other chains. But I'm not really like a huge NFT head and trader. Just I looked at what people seemed to want, and they seemed to want on chain, and they seemed to want immutability, and they seemed to want simplicity. So that's what they got.
What is Ordinals culture getting wrong?
I don't know. Every time somebody fucking posts some JSON blob on the chain that does some magical bullshit.
Every JSON blob.
Well, I wish that they just used a different protocol identifier in the envelope that would that would solve all the problems.
Yeah, I mean it's fine. Like I think it's like whatever. If the BRC20 people like know what they're doing, like they know that they're just sort of like speculating and gambling and whatever, that's like whatever. They can do that, right?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, I think kind of like overstate like the utility stuff. Like it's like, come on guys.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Let's not get the SEC on our ass.
I know, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess like sort of going off of that question, Brad JPN said he'd like to hear you go into the weeds on the problems of NFTs on Ethereum.
Yeah, so on Ethereum, NFTs are anything that implement the ERC 721 spec. And this is an interface, not an implementation. So it conforming to the ERC 721 spec just means that your smart contract on Ethereum implements certain calls that can be interacted with in a certain way. So you can say, you know, what's the metadata for this token, essentially, and transfer this token. But the implementation is not fixed. So even though from the interface, people might expect things like tokens are immutable or nobody can transfer the token but the original holder, that's actually not necessarily the case because that's not constrained by the implementation. ERC 721 smart contracts on Ethereum are free to implement the functionality of the interface in any way they want, including things like having a upgrade key, like an admin key that can just change the smart contract in arbitrary ways, including confiscating or transferring tokens, including minting new tokens, including having the metadata not be on chain and pointing to an external data source. And so all this means that if you want to kind of know exactly what you're getting on Ethereum, you have to do some pretty sophisticated inspection of the smart contract and actually audit the code for each individual ERC 721 smart contract to see like, okay, is it free from bugs? does it not have an admin key, and is the, and where's the data stored? Can the data, does the data just point to some server on AWS, which is commonly the case? Does it point to IPFS, but the pointer can be changed to a different IPFS resource? These are all things that you actually have to look at. And it makes, and also, it's very common that the metadata, that the actual NFT content is stored on IPFS or Arweave, which mm-hmm. I've already sort of complained about. IPFS is actually less bad than Arweave, because I think Arweave makes a bunch of promises that are going to be hard to keep. IPFS, on the other hand, is basically like BitTorrent. And that means that you're relying on, much like BitTorrent, you're relying on somebody to seed that content. In IPFS lingo, you're relying on somebody to pin, keep that content pinned, so that when somebody requests it on the IPFS network, they're able to retrieve the content. I don't think that NFT holders appreciate that it's often not clear who has the incentive to keep that content pinned.
Right.
Like, I create a ERC-721 collection. I put a bunch of content on IPFS. I keep it pinned while I'm like selling the content. I sell the tokens to a bunch of buyers. I'm not holding any more tokens. There's no incentive for me to keep the data pinned. And unless the buyers are pretty sophisticated and keep copies of the NFT content and replicate it on IPFS, that content can just go away.
Mm-hmm.
That has happened a few times that I'm aware of. I don't think that there's been any really high profile cases of it happening. But I actually do think that in, you know, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, a lot of NFTs on Ethereum will just start to decay
yeah.
as the content goes offline, as, you know, collectors, the people who are doing the collection sort of get out of the NFT business and are no longer have any incentive, and collectors don't step up to keep that content pinned on IPFS.
Right.
And when Arweave eventually meets its flaming demise, that also will be bad. So yeah, so inscriptions don't have any of this. Inscriptions don't have these problems because inscriptions are not an interface. They're an actual concrete implementation. It says, this is where the data is. No changes are permitted to the data. And they're very simple, and it's very easy to see exactly what the content of your inscription is. And the transfer rules, how they're transferred, are not different on a per inscription basis. They're all homogeneous. They all do the same thing. Once you've convinced yourself that the ordinals implementation, the whatever, you know, client you're using is correct, then you can be sure that all of the inscriptions are correct and have the same properties. So yeah, that's the main thing.
Your shtick.
Yeah, that's my shtick. And I when generative art NFTs started to become popular on Ethereum, I was like, okay, well, maybe I can like make some generative art NFTs and like make some money. Like, that'd be cool. So I looked into doing it, and I actually wrote a smart contract. I don't think I ever deployed it, but in looking at it and looking at like the way that the ERC-721 spec worked, in looking at how the metadata was commonly stored, I was like, I can't do this and feel good about it.
And thus the seed for ordinals was planted.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Moving on, Lindoko asked, MFer said he was going to make some generative art. When?
I think when once Parent Child is out.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
We're still so early.
Yeah, I have worked on I started working on a generative art engine. It kind of looks like this thing called Blaster that I made a while ago. You can go on my website. I think it's
Rotomor. And decode all the things.
Really start.
And inscribe all of them yourself, Dan, 10 times over.
Dan Browning art. Yeah, so yeah, there's some generative art on my website. This new one, it looks kind of like that. So yeah, once we have collections, then I think I'll start doing some weird generative art collection.
Nice.
Yep.
Steven Nobody asked, how does he see the development of the last 6 to 7 months? What has been positive and negative?
I guess positive has been just the insane adoption of inscriptions.
Yeah,
people like to say that inscriptions are dead, but I think they're 50% of on-chain traffic. Just fucking insane.
If ordinals are dead, Bitcoin's dead.
That's kind of, yeah.
Like, RIP.
Yeah. So, and then also recently, it looks like 50% of miners, somewhere around 50% of miners, I haven't verified this, are extracting the rare sats from the block reward.
I know. I just saw that.
Yeah. Which I think awesome. I think is crazy. I think, the rare sat meta is heating up.
I'm glad that they're doing it, because it seems like, well, I'm wondering if you know, it seems like an obvious business model to kind of go to mining facilities and be like, hey, I'll pay you X amount for your rare sat.
Yep.
You know, so I wonder if there's some marketplace or business that's kind of going around and being like, here's the code or whatever to like implement this and just like transfer it to me.
If I was a miner, I would actually just be stockpiling them.
Sure. I'd
be
saying like miner, but I guess like whether it's like a, you know, whether it's just like a side business that's like collecting these and like, you know, miners just want like the consistent whatever versus miners collecting them themselves.
Yeah. I think rare sats are only going to become more and more valuable. They're very simple. They're never going to change. People seem to have sort of accepted. They like the rarity levels. Mm-hmm. The rarity levels, in as far as possible, are very objective in the sense that they're tied to things in the Bitcoin protocol. So I think they'll always remain one of the sort of top tier curios.
Yeah, actually, there's a question about black sats. Black XBTC said, what are your thoughts on black sat rarity? They asked more, but yeah, what do you think about black sats?
I think they're cute. So yeah, for those who don't know, I actually don't know who created them. It may be the very maybe the very
pumping their own
tweeter
bag
who's asking the question. But yeah, I came up with the idea of black sats, which are the last sat in every block, whereas rare sats are the first sat in every block.
I guess that'd be uncommon.
Yeah. And they have various rarity levels. I think they're cute. I probably won't add them to the ORD implementation unless people really, really want them. But I think it's a great example of how people can sort of give sats whatever meaning they want.
Yeah.
And you could also, another thing that nobody's done yet is come up with a different mapping of number to some other value. So I did the number to name value. So sats have names, but you could come up with a mapping of the sat number to locations on Earth or colors or anything else. So you could come up with additional ways of viewing sats.
Yeah. That'd be cute.
Yep.
We encourage all of it. I guess, did you answer what's been negative about the development of the last 6 to 7 months?
I think we can also fold that into sub-1K's second next question.
Oh, question about how Bitcoin maxis are coming to terms with ordinals.
Yeah. So I think it's actually really unfortunate that a lot of Bitcoin maxis kind of drew like a culture war line in the sand with inscriptions and ordinals and decided that they were going to be on the anti-inscription side.
I know.
Because I actually think that they ceded a lot of ground. So I am, you know, obviously like pro ordinals and pro inscriptions, but I think that I have a lot more in common with those maxis.
Of course.
In terms of being like, no, BRC20s are a shitcoin.
I'm always like, Casey's a bigger maxi than you'll ever be.
So
I
think that it's unfortunate that more people, they could have taken the position like, yeah, actually, like, I don't really care about inscriptions. And if people want to degen on inscriptions and rare sats, that's totally fine. And like, come be a maxi with us. Let's kind of expand the scope of what being a maxi is and kind of acknowledge that there's not a whole lot wrong with that as long as people aren't like scamming. And then put, you know, BRC20 and like OrdFi and like a bunch of the crazy like Rube Goldberg machines that people are currently building on top of inscriptions, keep that in the shitcoin, you know, side of the, you know, whatever, outside of the bubble. So that's been kind of the negative development.
Yeah, it's been really sad to like lose faith in all these like Bitcoin people. I'm just like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, one guy told me he thought I should go to prison. And then he said
really?
That he thought that I was just using a female profile picture for engagement. Anyway, I just liked that. Also, sub-1K ordinals question, what's his perspective on inscription numbers?
Yeah, so I think inscription numbers were a pretty big mistake.
I've said over and over again, inscription numbers are a shitcoin.
Yeah, and let me be clear, I don't want to take away inscription numbers, but in particular, committing to inscription numbers being stable, i.e. that once an inscription gets its number, it never changes, has made the protocol way, way, way more complicated than it needs to be and makes development much slower, because every time you do something where an inscription is recognized that a previous, you know, version of the software didn't recognize, you add a new inscription in the inscription number sequence. And my very stupid, regrettable hack to solve this was to assign them negative inscription numbers and call them cursed inscriptions. For many reasons, I no longer think this is a good idea. And I sort of thought that there would be a small number of reasons that you would have a new inscriptions getting recognized. But in fact, there are actually a lot of reasons that you might have new inscriptions getting recognized that old versions of the software wouldn't recognize. So I now think that probably what we should do is not remove inscription numbers entirely, but just declare them to be permanently unstable. And you can use them to see, you know, your inscriptions, you know, its position within the, you know, inscriptions that have been made, you know, where it is approximately in the supply of inscriptions, but that you shouldn't use it. You shouldn't rely on it as being a permanent identifier.
Damn, this is rough for sub 1K ordinals to hear.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the downside of, you know, the inscription numbers wouldn't change a ton, fortunately.
But if you have like, you know, 69...
Yeah, if you have
it's
inscription number 69,
68 or 70.
That's right. Or if you have inscription like 999 and it gets bumped up.
But the reality is that you never had 69. You know what I mean? If you're going to get bumped by like a new inscription being recognized, like this is why I say it's a shit coin, because it's like if there was a cursed inscription that was below,
mm-hmm.
if you have inscription number 69, let's say, and there's a cursed inscription below you.
Mm. You never had 69.
To begin with.
Yeah.
It was never yours.
Yeah, it was never yours. So, I mean, this is obviously a big change and something that I don't know how people are going to feel about it. I'm going to try to put some feelers out and make a blog post and ask people what they
think. Didn't you already make the blog post?
Yeah, I did, but...
What?
I haven't been publicizing it.
You posted it, yeah.
I haven't been publicizing it, yeah. But yeah, rotomore.com/blog/thegreatrenumbering. you can see my thoughts on it. It's not set in stone. And I want to make a good case for it in the future, but I mean, in the real case for it is it makes development simpler. It makes the protocol simpler. It makes changes to the protocol be easier to make. Good changes to the protocol be easier to make and require less coordination across the ecosystem before they can happen.
I did. So neither Raph nor Ordinally submitted a question on Twitter, but I asked them both if they had questions and they both said, ask him about cursed inscriptions.
Oh, damn. Rough. There we go.
So yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it more. Yeah, I'm curious to see what people think. I think like I read your blog post. Like, I think your argument is like, I get it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think people will get it, but yeah. You know, let's, yeah.
Yeah, the big problem is that I made an all caps tweet several months ago when vibes were very high and I said inscription numbers will never change. So yeah, walking that back is tricky.
Going against his word.
Going against
a
my
stain
word.
Stain
yeah.
on your record.
Yeah, stain on my record, yeah.
Okay, Rindahl asked, what happened in the last 9 months that surprised you?
Peter Schiff.
That was my answer. I gave you that answer.
God damn it. I don't
You want to take credit for my answer?
Dude, what?
But that is the right answer.
Yeah, I mean
that's just so insane.
Yeah, Peter Schiff. I don't know, nothing else. I mean, obviously the rapidity with which things have progressed has been crazy.
Yeah, Peter Schiff was funny because it was just like so deranged.
Yeah, such an e-bend, you know, and then being like, oh yeah, I don't think Bitcoin's valuable, but like inscriptions are valuable.
I had people message me and be like, oh my God, do you know Peter Schiff? He's now saying ordinals are cool. And I'm like, you were listening to Peter Schiff? Like you thought that Peter Schiff was a good person to listen to for financial advice?
Yeah.
NGMI.
Yeah.
Sanj Femojis asked, does he see the parent-child method from the GitHub where the parent is included in each child's inscription transaction as the most likely form of provenance going forward?
Yep, I do. Yeah, I think it's really nice. It's on-chain, so anybody can verify that, you know, anybody can verify the provenance just by looking at the chain. It's very simple. It's a very natural extension of the protocol, and it's flexible, which means that you can use inscriptions to represent collections. You can use inscriptions to represent a person or a group that has multiple collections. You can have substructure within collections. Like you could have a collection that has seasons, right? Where like you have an unlimited number of seasons, but then each season is limited to like 100 inscriptions or whatever. So it's very nice. It's a very nice extension of the protocol. I wish I had done it sooner so that it would be adopted. But yeah, I think it'll take some time, and probably the old style collections that are just JSON files will always be around. But you know, yeah, I do think it'll eventually be.
I think it's nice. I think it's elegant. I like the idea of like how you have like closing a collection, like sending the, you know, burning the parent to like show that a collection is closed. I like that kind of stuff. I like the like hierarchical trees. Yeah,
yep.
I'm into it.
Yep.
Okay, Bob Bodily asked a long
Bob Bodily or
question.
Bob Bodily. We're not
Bodily.
Sure if it's Bob Bodily or Bob Bodily. Please enlighten us in the comments.
He asked a long
or some strange
question.
Third thing.
Yeah, Bob. Whatever.
Bob Bottle-Eye.
Yeah. This question is basically just like asking about the decentralization of indexing, right? Or like the problem that like not that many people run their own indexer.
Right, yeah.
Which I didn't understand. Like I've had people ask me about this before and I don't understand. I'm like, it's not that hard to run your own node.
Right.
But like, is there something I'm missing?
Yeah, I mean, to summarize the question, it's saying that Ordinals is a meta protocol on Bitcoin and that it's fairly centralized, that users rely on a few APIs to check the state of Ordinals. And then if you look at meta protocols on top of Ordinals, like BRC20, RRC20, TAP, SNS, etc., these protocols are also have the same problem that people look at these meta protocol indexers. And so, you know, I agree that this is a problem. I sort of don't agree with Bob's conclusions because I think the answer is fundamentally to just run your own indexer. It's not super crazy expensive to run your own indexer. And you can make indexers cheaper to run. For example, you can do SPV proofs for inscriptions where you don't have to download and verify the whole blockchain. You just do SPV proofs where you verify only those transactions that concern a particular ordinal.
Mm.
And so this can give you SPV wallets that use ordinals, and that this is kind of the way that Bitcoin solves it. We'd like people to run their own Bitcoin nodes, but we don't. A lot of people use SPV wallets, which are pretty good security. And so we can bring the same tech to Bitcoin. Bob kind of suggests a few, some solutions, things like a sovereign rollup, a decentralized ordinals indexer on a Bitcoin sidechain, or some sort of incentive to get people to run indexers. So I actually view these things as kind of like pushing the problem somewhere else in the stack. Like if you're relying on either sovereign rollups or a ordinals indexer on a sidechain, then people have to run that software in order to verify the in order to get the same level of security. They have to run the decentralized ordinal indexer, so they're not querying somebody else's decentralized ordinal indexer. They have to verify the rollups. So I think that the simplest solution to this problem is just make it easier to run indexers and get more people to run ORD. I think that this has been a big problem with the off-chain protocols, the meta protocols like BRC20, because those don't, as far as I know, have good open source indexers, which is quite frankly, I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's an embarrassment, like to have these meta protocols and then everybody's just looking them up in API calls, and they couldn't, there is no good open source, you know, code that they could just run themselves. It's kind of sad. So yeah, I think you know, I agree that it's a problem, but I guess I disagree about the solutions. I think the solution is run your own node, run your own indexer for these protocols. And for protocols that you can use SPV proofs, which includes ordinals and inscriptions, use SPV proofs to have lighter wallets. I'll note that all of these meta protocols cannot have SPV proofs because an SPV proof relies on being able to verify some, for example, for Bitcoin, it relies on trusting that a transaction is valid because it's been included in the latest chain and not having to download a bunch of other transactions. The problem with a protocol like BRC20 is that because it's not UTXO based, you actually have to download the entire chain to know that your BRC20 transfer is valid. There's no subset of the chain because a BRC20 mint or transfer could be hiding in any one of the transactions that you didn't look at. That's why it's bad. Whereas with Taproot assets or RGB, you actually can have SPV security models. So yeah, for ordinals and inscriptions, run your own node, run SPV nodes. For these meta protocols, use UTXO-based protocols that have SPV security and use write SPV wallets is, I think, my answer. Yep.
All right, continuing on with you, controversial.
Yeah.
21E6 Crypto asked about key value pairs on inscriptions and if this could lead to royalties for creators.
Yeah, so I am not actually opposed to royalties. The issue is that there's no way to implement them.
Yeah.
There's just no good implementation. If you do a transfer of an asset that has royalties, there's no way to ensure that the that the price that was paid is to report the price to the royalties mechanism. You and I can always do a off-chain transfer of funds for a high price and then report a low price to the on-chain royalties mechanism. We can even make that atomic by putting it in a wrapper contract or something. So there's always ways to get around royalties. And then when you look at actual implementations, even the implementations are pretty messy. So yeah, Ordinals has no notion of royalties, but it might, metadata on inscriptions might lead to a tipping address for the artist where people, if they want, they can tip the artist. So I think that's fine. That's great. But yeah, I'm kind of anti-royalties simply because I think the implementations are bad. And also because in other NFT ecosystems, people were sort of promised a vision of royalties that couldn't be delivered. And there's been incredible, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth as it turns out that this Web3, you know, golden era of perpetual passive income from your NFTs via royalties is simply not possible to deliver.
Yeah, I think that's the big problem with royalties, is like promising something to artists that like can't actually be delivered.
Yep. And all of the...
And obfuscating that with like technical whatever.
Yep. And all of the exchanges on other chains are all doing this race to the bottom where they all try to get rid of royalties or make them opt in or have bizarre on-chain mechanisms to try to prevent NFTs from trading on. It's a mess. So I think it's really good that Ordinals just kind of sidestepped that.
On to graph 11. Any thoughts on recursion being broken on mobile Safari?
Yeah, so this is a problem. Recursive inscriptions can't be viewed on mobile Safari. This is due to a bug in Safari. Safari does not implement the content security policy headers correctly.
We need to submit a SIP.
Yeah, we need
Safari
to.
Safari improvement proposal. I told Casey that joke earlier. He didn't get it.
I promised to laugh more this time. I hope it seemed
it seemed so
genuine. Yeah, I mean, I think probably what we might do is just make the headers so that recursive. We'll try to fix it. I don't know. I don't have a good solution here. Yeah.
The SIP.
Yeah, SIP. Yep.
Taro Ordinals asked, what are his fitness routines for body and for mind?
Yeah, fitness routines for body. Workout twice a week with trainer Owen at a undisclosed gym on the west coast of the United States. Keeps me jacked. And then for mind, yeah, nothing. Yeah, I'm a mess.
You,
mentally.
You sleep a good amount.
Yeah, that's kind of depression sleeping. You know?
No,
I don't
but
know
I think
like,
sleeping a good amount is like good advice.
Yeah, I guess
for
I'd
these
be,
degens.
I'd be more cracked out if I was sleeping less.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
feel like you do a good job of like going to bed at a semi-reasonable hour.
Yeah.
And like you get like 8 hours of sleep.
This is true.
That's like a really, you know, yeah. I feel like that's the bedrock of like
bedrock.
Mental health.
Yeah, so sleep, you know? Yeah.
Ordinal Labs asked, has he bought any inscriptions? And if so, what?
I bought inscription 123 from, I don't know if I've said, but yeah, it's just an early cute inscription that I saw that I wanted to buy from a fellow inscription degen.
Cute.
So yeah, but that's it. Yeah. I think I paid like 10,000 sats or like,
damn,
I don't know what I paid. Yeah,
and people have donated stuff to you.
Yeah, the donation addresses.
But
yeah,
you haven't bought stuff.
Yeah, really. I used to have donation addresses, and I received donations of a bunch of inscriptions to those donation addresses.
I mean, we have an inscription donation address for like Open Ordinals Institute.
Yeah, I used to have personal donation addresses, and now there's donation addresses for the Open Ordinals Institute, which is basically just a nonprofit to fund RAF. to keep young Raf fed and clothed and doing more work on Ord.
Yeah.
And have we gotten a bunch of, do we continue to get random inscriptions to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually talked to someone recently about, because sometimes I'll ask like, what do people want? Like that donate inscriptions? Like, do they not want us to sell? You know, I can understand if they'd be like, don't sell the inscription I donated, but also like,
it's
not really a donation.
If you donate something, we're going to fucking sell it.
I know,
it.
But like, I just wonder
we're going to top the market, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, right. So like when people donate, like so if I know the person, sometimes I'll ask like, do you have any thoughts on like what we could do? And someone, I think it was Dan Anderson. Yeah, it was Dan Anderson, like came up with the idea of like, we should do like a big auction where we auction off the inscriptions that have been donated and like kind of publicize it and everything. Right. The concern is basically just like you don't want to like floor the price of all these collections, right? Yeah. Like that would suck.
I mean, if the auction is high profile and we say which ones we're selling, then that is kind of getting some publicity. You know?
That's what I think too. I think it would work well. So maybe we'll do that at some point in the future, because otherwise I'm just like, I think like, you know, for people that have high value inscriptions, it's probably easier for them to donate that than to like sell that and then donate the profit, you know? So I understand why people donate inscriptions.
Yep, totally.
So maybe we'll do that at some point. Saul asked, are you going to have an Ord Wallet GUI with an inscription browser?
Yeah, we want to do a GUI wallet, but this is a big, big project. I mean, like
I've noticed like there is a dearth of front end devs. Just generally in my experience.
Yeah.
Everyone's a back end dev, but no one understands how to make a good user experience.
Yeah. I think being an open source front end dev is a little thankless. There's also not a lot of like just designers in open source. And I think in general, it's not.
Is it that they can make more money doing other things and so they don't like come to open source? Like why is it that?
I think part of it is that front end and design stuff is somewhat subjective. And this makes it hard to do in an open source way that you're going to get a lot of, you know, weird criticism and people who don't like it or want it a different way. And it can just be frustrating. Whereas a lot of the time, backend improvements are obvious improvements.
Right.
They're objective improvements to the code. But in terms of us doing the wallet, Ord is not the healthiest open source project.
How are you going to say that?
Well, just in the sense of not having as many contributors as we would like. We do get some contributions.
Well, we have money from donations.
We don't want to like, I mean, hiring a second.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe we shouldn't have this conversation on Ordinals. Yeah. An hour deep into the Ordinals Q&A.
An hour deep into the Ordinals Q&A. But yeah, we don't get as many contributions as we would like. And a lot of the time the contributions can't be used because they don't have tests or they don't, you know, meet the code quality standards of the repo.
I would love to find a good front end dev just generally.
Yep.
Like regardless of the open source stuff.
For what?
All the shit I want to do. Mm. I don't know any.
Yeah, like, hit Aaron up if you want to be paid low and work like a slave.
All right, move on.
Well, some of the other questions, this is also, can I see this? Sats. Sol Sats.
Yeah.
Use of the annex. So this is sort of an interesting thing. Inscriptions are stored in scripts, in Taproot scripts, but there's another thing that another place that they could be stored, the Taproot signature annex. And this would actually be a way better place to store inscriptions because you would only require one transaction to create an inscription instead of a commit and a reveal, and would let us use maybe a cleaner encoding of the inscription. This is something we'd like to do eventually, but it's not on the current roadmap, maybe. But I'd have to get a lot of like motivation. I'd have to be like, all right, you know, going to do some real work here, going to, you know, make this change. Yeah. So eventually we'll use the annex and you only need one transaction to inscribe. Sats as tokens. This is something that I'd really like to see is somebody, I don't know, kind of creating a non-fungible token standard that was based on imbuing meaning to individual sats, saying like this range of like 1,000 sats are this token. It winds up actually being really hard just because of the dust limit and UTXO management. So I don't think it winds up being practical, but I think it'd be cute. They also ask current opinion of the Stax L2 ecosystem. I'm not a big Stax fan.
Really?
Yeah. I think just because they've sort of branded Stax as Bitcoin, when in fact it is a free floating token that you can buy with Bitcoin. There's kind of no relationship between Stax and Bitcoin except for the fact that you can buy it with Bitcoin. So it's just it's another altcoin that kind of is an affinity scam.
I've tried to get Stax people to like explain to me how it's Bitcoin or related to Bitcoin in any way other than any other altcoin. And like, I've never even gotten close to like a good answer.
Yeah.
Like I've gotten people like just sort of like saying a bunch of words at me that like didn't really make sense and kind of hoping that. And then I've had people just be like, yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what's up with all that.
I've heard people say things like, well, like if Lightning is Bitcoin, then you know you can have Bitcoin on other things. And well, Lightning is something different. Lightning is Bitcoin that's locked in these you know, smart contracts, I'd say, yeah, like sort of in-flight Lightning is not quite Bitcoin. However, it is one-to-one pegged to Bitcoin, right, such that when you withdraw it to the chain, you're one-to-one pegging with Bitcoin. If Lightning was a separate token, then of course you couldn't make the argument that Bitcoin was Lightning.
Yeah.
They also ask how much for Genesis inscription. We covered this. 1,000 Bitcoin.
1,000 Bitcoin. Thank you. The Frank America asked, is Ordinals a flash in the pan?
If not, why not? Yeah, Ordinals is and isn't a flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. I think there will be many flashes with Ordinals.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yep, and we'll probably see another one. Like there's always pumps in bull markets. So next bull market, we'll probably see one. But my hope is that no matter what the level of activity is, there will always be people who are interested in Ordinals.
Ordinals are forever.
Yeah, they're forever.
You know, they will outlive us all.
Yep. Absolutely.
H Crypto Addict asked, are new cursed Ordinals cases, will they be included in the next release? How long do you expect to take for Cursed to become stable? I guess we already kind of talked about this with Cursed.
Yeah, I hope to just nuke Cursed inscriptions and just mass bless all of them and fold them into the existing inscriptions.
He's making a plea to the people.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe not next release, but depending on how people react to my blog
post. Yeah, we'll see. I'm curious even if just your answers on this, if people will be like mad or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if they'll care, I don't know.
Yeah.
Astro3261 asked, are Ordinals good or bad for Bitcoin?
I think Ordinals are
obviously
good for Bitcoin.
Yep. Easy question.
Yeah. They increase the demand for block space, which increases fees, which secures miner revenues, which we need as the subsidy decreases. I will say that the growth and the size of the UTXO set does bother me. The UTXO set has grown a ton.
Isn't that from the BRC20s?
Yeah, I think it's BRC20s. And that's also, so the UTXO set is unspent Bitcoin transaction outputs. This is another gripe with BRC20, which is that BRC20s create all these UTXOs to create inscriptions, but spending those UTXOs is not actually required to do things in the BRC20 protocol. You can just create new UTXOs and spend from those. So I think that BRC20 in particular is not great in terms of not encouraging people to clean up their UTXOs, which contributes to the size of the UTXO set, which is increases the size of cost of running a full node, which is not great.
Yeah.
But overall, I think Ordinals good for Bitcoin.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Ordinals are over 50% of Bitcoin transactions.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, Bitcoiners, maxis, you got to step up your game.
Yeah. Ordinal Gazette asked, what does anarcho cat bus mean?
I've always sort of considered myself an anarchist, but I've always looked at these additional qualifiers like anarcho-communist, anarcho-monarchist, anarcho-primitivist as being like...
Anarcho-monarchist?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
That's kind of like a meme.
It's like, I'm a princess.
It's a meme. It's a meme. It's a meme political orientation where you're like, yeah, you have a monarch, but he doesn't do anything. I don't really know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's just a guy.
Yeah. So I just sort of... Anarcho cat bus, I just thought it was kind of funny. It's just like, yeah, whatever, you know.
I assumed it was just a play on anarcho capitalist.
Yeah, maybe that too. You know, I'd say anarcho capitalist is the closest to my my predilections.
Obviously, I mean, we had the whole capitalism debate.
Yeah,
you love that shit.
I love it. Yeah.
Rosie asked, "Who would he like to play the role of Casey in the Ordinals?"
Willem Dafoe, 100%.
My answer
no doubt.
That I think is actually very good. Tom Cruise.
Jesus, no.
I feel like you have Tom Cruise energy.
I hope not. God.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, he's kind of like, his mannerisms are very like, sort of noticeable. He's always playing Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, actually, I guess you're a little too chill to be played by Tom Cruise.
Yeah. No, but I'll take it. You know, Tom Cruise. Yeah, why not?
He's like good looking. Yeah, it's not an insult.
And what does he do in this movie? He just programs?
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise would be right for Casey. Who should play Aaron in the Ordinals movie? That's my fucking question.
I don't know, your favorite Kardashian, maybe?
No, they're not good actresses.
Yeah, but
they don't look like me. You could have Kylie Jenner play me in the Ordinals movie.
No, clearly not. Taylor Swift?
She's not an actress.
Yeah, but why not?
I also don't look like Taylor Swift.
You love Taylor Swift.
I think maybe like Jennifer Lawrence or something.
Sure. Yeah, I can.
She
see
doesn't
that.
Not look like me. I think I just think of her because she played the scientist girl in the like Don't Look Up movie.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my god, it's me at the telescope. like that. Well, whatever. Send your suggestions. Robinhood's Lay One, I think maybe Layer One, Lay One. Asked, when is Casey going to release the shrooms? I assume that means they think you're Shroomtoshi.
Yeah, the shrooms are an early set of inscriptions that were made of pixel art shrooms.
So is Shroomtoshi not sold, the shrooms?
No, I think Shroomtoshi is waiting for what people refer to as the right price. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm not Shroomtoshi. I can reveal that we believe Shroomtoshi to be Jolly of Jolly Big Penis fame, an early inscriber. But aside from that, the identity of Shroomtoshi is unknown, and I am not Shroomtoshi, I can confirm.
And we don't even have our own reasons for thinking that Jolly and Shroomtoshi are the same person. We've just heard from other people.
Yeah, using on-chain analysis, though.
We've got our on-chain analysts on it.
Yeah, which we just trusted them. We haven't.
Yeah, we
that.
Blindly trust.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shroomtoshi. If you're Jolly, like, I love Jolly. Jolly's like my favorite.
Jolly's a legend. Yeah, Jolly's
an absolute fucking legend. InChain22 asked, thoughts on having shitcoins on Bitcoin? Isn't it in conflict of a Bitcoiner's philosophy/ethos?
I kind of think it's actually fine. I think that Bitcoin is strong and Bitcoin can survive people using it for things that, you know, people are going to use Bitcoin itself in ways that are against Bitcoin's ethos.
Yeah, I mean, if Bitcoin can't survive shitcoins, like, it can't survive, like, government takedown.
Yeah, and
you know?
I ultimately actually do believe that demand for block space is important, and I would love it if there was some large stablecoin that was settling to Bitcoin. I think that it increases demand for fees, and two, it, you know, people get into a shitcoin and then get into the L1 token that the shitcoin is based on. People mm-hmm. get into Ethereum shitcoins and then they wind up kind of becoming ETH heads just as the natural, you know, progression from that, because they're already sort of using Ethereum. I think it's good for people to use Bitcoin, even if they're using Bitcoin for things that we, you know, aren't exactly super
excited about. Not everyone's going to be a sovend.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
Lana Granger's asked, during the scaling debate, were you pro SegWit or bigger blocks? Are you a big blocker,
yeah,
Casey?
This is good. I can clear my name. No, pro SegWit. I was in the camp of people just scratching our heads, wondering why we didn't have SegWit already. I thought that the big blockers were fucking idiots. I thought that the SegWit 2x was just kind of a clown show. And I was very glad when SegWit 2x failed and we just got normie SegWit. I think big blocks are... we probably could increase Bitcoin's block size a little bit, but it's very dangerous and not something that we should do lightly. SegWit was already a block size increase. SegWit was already a effective 2x block size increase, 2x plus block size increase. So I think SegWit 2x was the right thing, and I don't advocate for bigger blocks now. And I think I have to see periods of long periods of insanely high fees before I would say that it would be okay to increase the block size. But I wouldn't even advocate for it. Like, I don't want to get into that mess, you know?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't advocate for it except for some very limited circumstances. And even then, I wouldn't bother with the politics.
Ash Odendox asked, is he interested in use cases for ordinals like media democracy or Bitcoin internet?
So
this may be like the utility question a little bit.
Yeah, this is kind of the utility question, where I think that blockchains just aren't really good for that much. And that, of course, applies to ordinals and inscriptions. They're good for these weirdo curio collectibles on Bitcoin, and I'm kind of fine with that being, you know, where they start and end. I think that weirdo curios and collectibles and art and culture is a great use case, and inscription doesn't need to be anything more than that to be interesting.
Agreed. Last question. Jiren asked, what are you planning to implement in the ordinals protocol?
Okay, so already implemented is provenance with parent-child inscriptions.
That release will probably be out before this episode.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do this. That'll be out. We hope to stabilize an offset field in inscriptions so that you can make multiple inscriptions in one transaction to make inscribing collections more efficient. What else? Metadata. I've been working on a proposal for metadata. I was thinking about doing it as just simple key value pairs. I think it's actually going to be arbitrary JSON metadata that you can attach to an inscription. So that's an extension of the protocol, so that people can sort of add metadata about their inscriptions to describe them, like title and, you know, stuff like that. And then there aren't actually any more protocol things I think that I want to do. Obviously, there's a lot of improvements that need to be made to the wallet, that need to be made to the Explorer. I think a big improvement is just letting people post PSBTs for buying an inscription or selling an inscription onto ordinals.com. So you can just post a PSBTU offering an ordinal for sale. And then if you want to buy that ordinal, you can download the PSBT, finish it, and finalize it and sign it. I think that gets us really close to a kind of a decentralized marketplace where, you know, we have these repositories for PSBTs, some sort of standard format, and having it be on ordinals.com. So if people want to get their PSBTs there, they can. But yeah, the nice thing about the ordinals protocol is that it's very simple. And honestly, I think it's really close to being done. And that's nice. If it's finished, and the annex, that's something eventually, but that won't really change too much about what inscriptions can do, just where they live in transactions and how they're encoded. That's it.
Nice.
Yep.
That's our last question.
Yeah.
We're probably at fucking 2 hours at this point.
Yeah, this was
an hour and a half maybe.
This was a chunky episode. But yeah, thanks for the questions. We got a lot of great questions, so I'm super.
Yeah, I loved it. I wasn't sure when I tweeted like if we were gonna get a bunch of questions, but yep. The DGens love it.
DGens love inscriptions.
We love the DGens.
We love the DGens. Yeah, and even though, you know, we're haters sometimes, honestly, we love the DGens. We even love the BRC20 DGens.
Absolutely.
And the OrdFi DGens and the Pepe Maximalist.
People using Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely.
We love to see it.
Yep.
Next episode.
Yeah.
I think we're going to talk to Raf.
Yeah, we're going to talk to young Raf Jaff. His tell-all where he's going to say how awful it is working with me.
Yeah, for sure. but yeah, till next time.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.